Luke 6, 12 through 19. It was at that time that he went off to the mountain to pray, and he spent the whole night in prayer to God. And when day came, he called his disciples to him and chose 12 of them, whom he also named as apostles. Simon, whom he also named Peter, and Andrew his brother, and James and John, and Philip and Bartholomew, and Matthew and Thomas, James the son of Alphaeus, and Simon, who was called the Zealot, Judas the son of James, and Judas Iscariot, who became a traitor. Jesus came down with them and stood on a level place, and there was a large crowd of his disciples and a great throng of people from all Judea and Jerusalem and the coastal regions of Tyre and Sidon. All who had come to hear him and to be healed of their diseases, and those who were troubled with unclean spirits were cured, and all of the people were trying to touch him, for power was coming from him and healing them all.
I know it's been said before, but good morning. We've been talking about in this series of imitating Jesus. Let me first of all be sure that my recording is going. Yeah, okay. Imitating Jesus. And so, as a perfect example, we're going to consider Jesus as a man of prayer today. How many people do you know have climbed to the top or tried to climb Mount Rainier? I know Scott's made it as far as Camp Muir, I believe, maybe even a bit further before he came back down. I know he's been to the top of St. Helens. Of course, that's a little bit easier now that half the top is blown away. How many have been to the top of Everest? Julie smirked a little bit. That's a long way up. And I look at the example of Jesus somewhat like that, daunting. Who had the most important job in the whole world ever? Any thoughts? Good morning, Susan. Who had the most important job?
Jesus.
You think? Think maybe it was Jesus' most important job. And you've got important stuff, right? Your days, Mark, your day has probably got all sorts of spare time in it, right? Not really. Any person who is self-employed knows that if you're going to make a living, you're going to work hard. How much open time do you have? And I'm asking this because I look at Jesus, and his job is far more important than the job Mark's doing or what I'm doing for that matter. And yet Jesus was a man devoted to prayer. Now, what happens when you're praying as far as your time investment is concerned? Is designated time, isn't it? It's committed time. It's if I'm praying, I'm not doing other things, right? And so here's this guy with the most important job in the world and probably the most prolific prayer that you've ever heard of. How do you reconcile the two? How did he not get so busy that he didn't have time to pray? I wonder if I've ever used that excuse. I'm just so busy. I get to the end of my day and say, wow, my day was filled up. And I didn't pause to pray. That ever happened to you? Oh man, here it is, 12:30, time to go to bed, and I haven't really had a great talk with my God yet. Never happened to you? And so we're going to be looking at Jesus and seeing if Maybe the reason that happens to us is we haven't put the same priority on prayer that he did. I mean, here's another question. Of all the people in the world, how many knew the heart and mind of the Father better than he did? How many had a closer relationship with the Father than he did? Now, maybe that's why he prayed so much. He was talking to somebody that was very dear to him. Anyway, right, think of some of the things that we can think about of the prayer life of Jesus. Jesus prayed throughout his day. Now, what do I mean by that? For example, in Mark 1, I'm not going to examine these verses, just mention them to you. You can write them down and look at them. But Mark 1:35 says, early in the morning, maybe before anybody else was stirring, Jesus went out to pray. Luke 5:16 said he would often slip away. I got to find some private time. I got to go talk to my dad about this. Johnny, have you ever got on the phone and called your dad down in California talking about a project you were on? I know that he sent you some songs yesterday. Yeah. So Johnny gets on the phone and talks to his dad down in California. Jesus would slip away, do the same thing, to talk to his father. In Luke 6, where we just read, Jesus was up all night praying. I tried that one time. My dear friend Andy's father was dying of cancer. And I was determined I was going to keep a vigil. I was going to pray and read all night long. I didn't make it. I just got to the point where if I tried to pray, I'd go to sleep. I mean, I was just that tired. But Jesus, all night long. And there's many other references that we could go to where you find Jesus slipping away to pray or praying about this or taking some time out, going away from the multitude so he could have a minute by himself or a few minutes by himself to talk to his father. So it became such a pattern with him, such a pattern that his disciples came to him in Luke 11 saying, teach us to pray. So let's go over to Luke 11. I want to examine this passage a little bit with you in Luke chapter 11. And it came about, verse 1, that while he was praying in a certain place, after he had finished, one of his disciples said to him, Lord, teach us to pray, just as John taught his disciples. I mean, did these people not know how to pray? I don't know what to say. I suspect that the prayer life of Jesus was so distinct from the typical Jewish, you ever gone to the what do they call it, the Wailing Wall? And they stuff in prayers into the cracks, and I think you got to pay a priest if you want to utter a prayer so he can pray it for you. And there was a very formalistic prayer life. And so it's not that the nation of Israel didn't know what prayer was. I mean, look at the book of Psalms. Those can be considered, read one and say amen at the end. You just said a prayer, right? And so teach us to pray, just as John taught his disciples. And so he said to them, now what he's going to do is he's going to give them a model. He said to them, and you can read similar over in the book of Matthew, but we're just looking here at Luke. And he said to them, when you pray, say, Father, hallowed be your name, your kingdom come. Give us each day our daily bread and forgive us our sins, for we ourselves forgive everyone who is indebted to us, and lead us not into temptation. That sounds like a kind of a Reader's Digest version of the Lord's Prayer in Matthew, doesn't it? But this is from the lips of Jesus. And I submit to you that he's not saying, say these words, but fill in the blanks where this word is. How great is God to you? So you start with the greatness of God, and they start with a desire for God's kingdom, which did come, by the way, already. But we could pray that it will expand and grow and ever increase. Give us what we need day by day. Man, hoard up a big bank account or put yourself into making sure you got lots of money, or you can put yourself into trusting God. Okay? Not being an idol, not being idle or foolish, but not being driven by the fact that you're in it by yourself to provide for yourself. Give us today the bread for today, and forgive us because we make mistakes. Michael, you ever made a mistake? You don't have to answer that. We already know. We all have. And we all need forgiveness. We all need to be that welcome me back into your warm embrace, even though I've messed up. We all need that. We need that with God. We need that with each other. And for we ourselves also forgive. You know, the more willing we are to forgive the people around us who made mistakes, the more willing God is to forgive us. We're setting a standard, by the way, for how we want him to treat us when we mess up. Think about that next time you're holding a grudge or you're saying, I just can't get over it. You're telling God there are certain things you don't want him to get over about you. And so this openness. So anyway, Jesus is giving them this model of prayer. And then, okay, teach us to pray. Here's his model of prayer. That'd be great if that's all it was, right? But read on with me here in verse 5. And he said to them, okay, here's how to pray. Now, how do you use that prayer? And he said to them, suppose one of you shall have a friend and shall go to him at midnight and say to him, friend, lend me three loaves. For a friend of mine has come from a journey and I have nothing to set before. So there's a clear need. I have a friend just came and so I'm knocking on your door because I smelled the bread that your wife baked, so could I borrow it from you? Go away! Wife and I and kids are in bed already, and I can't get up and give you. And he says in verse 8, I tell you, even though he will not get up and give him because he is his friend, yet because of his persistence. What's it's persistence? Pardon?
Your not giving up.
Not giving up. Come on, open the door. Until he opens the door. Because of perpetual pounding, he's not going to be able to sleep anyway. Now, he didn't get up and give him because he was his friend, but he got up and gave him because of his perseverance. What do you suppose Jesus is saying? His persistence. What do you suppose Jesus is saying there? Well, teach us to pray. Here's what you can, here's some things to include in your prayer. Now, by the way, when you're doing, think about this guy. He would not go away until what? Till he got what he was asking for. What about you? As you're knocking on heaven's door. I prayed about that last week, nothing happened. Why is Jesus saying this? What's his message to you? What does he want you to take from this? Well, how will this motivate and activate your prayer life? Don't give up. Don't ever give up. Who said that? Jimmy V. He's talking about fighting cancer. Don't give up. Don't ever give up. And he just persist. Jesus taught that same lesson, but he didn't stop there. He said, even though he won't give up and give him because he's his friend. Does that mean Jesus expects that God won't give us anything because we're his friend? The only reason God will give us anything is because we just keep asking, nagging him, nagging, nagging, nagging. Ah, go away, I'll give you the bread. Is that what he's trying to say that God is like? No, he's trying to say that we even know the value of persistence in our interactions with each other. So he modifies this with the next story. The next story then, ask, seek, knock. Ask, seek, knock. I say to you, ask and it shall be given to you. Seek and you shall find. Knock and it shall be opened to you. I think Jesus is looking at the various levels of persistence. How badly do you want this? How much do you depend upon God to give it to you? You just keep persevering to the point of knocking on heaven's door, and it shall be opened to you. For now, the word for there in verse 10 is explanatory, isn't it? Everyone Who asks receives, and he who seeks finds, and to him who knocks it shall be given. Now, suppose one of you fathers, one of you guys, Michael, maybe you, or you're not a father yet, Scott, you are. One of you, or Johnny, is asked by his son for a fish. So I've seen Johnny. He's a little bit antagonistic here. So Timmy asks him for a fish, and instead of a fish, he slips him a snake. Have you ever thought that maybe sometimes God is like a trickster? I'm going to ask him for this, and I got that instead. But you're a father. What would it take for you to give Timmy a snake when he asks for a piece of fish?
But I couldn't send it on myself.
You can't imagine giving your son a snake when he asks you for a fish. You just can't imagine. Or he says, or if he's asked for an egg, Daddy, could I have one of those hard-boiled eggs? Johnny's hard-boiled eggs every once in a while. Can I have one of those hard-boiled eggs? And so Johnny takes an eggshell and has a black scorpion inside the eggshell. Here, Timmy, have this. Does God answer our prayers in ways that hurt us? Now, the only way we can say yes is when we say that he didn't give me what I wanted. Say, my God is only going to give me what I need. He's not necessarily going to give me what I want. If Timmy asked you for a stick of dynamite, would you give it to him? Why?
That we both can go correctly.
Neither one of us could handle it correctly. And so sometimes what we ask for is going to hurt us. And God won't give that to us. But that doesn't mean he's slipping us a scorpion instead of an egg. And then Jesus goes on to say, if you guys know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more shall your heavenly Father give the Holy Spirit to those who ask him? Now, this message is not to delve into that thought. It's simply to delve into the thought that Jesus said, when you ask your Father and when you ask him with persistence because you believe he is the source of your good, you're going to get good. You're going to get good. Jesus didn't say maybe or he might on a good day when God gets a hole in one on the golf score, he's going to be happy and say he'll give you good stuff. Because he will give you good stuff. So Jesus, when they said, teach us to pray, he says, well, here's a model of the thing you should include in your prayer. But I want you to understand that you really, if you will persevere and keep asking God, keep asking, say, well, I prayed about that 3 times. I hadn't heard anything yet. Or did you hear what this said? Did you hear what Jesus said here in Luke 11? Keep asking. What's the longest that you have been praying for something before it came to pass? Now, my sister left, got her life got all goofed up maritally and emotionally, and she abandoned Jesus. Oh, I don't know how long, 20 years, 25 years? I wonder how long my mother prayed that she would come back to God. Well, she did. When my father passed, the flakes came off of her eyes. Her heart melted. And she bawled her eyes out. And she's been serving Jesus fervently ever since. I wonder how long my mom prayed during that 20 years. Was it every day? Once a week? Did she give up and say, God, God's not hearing me about my daughter? Jesus said, persist. Persist. You got something that's on your heart, something that's really important to you, something that you have no control over, but you know your Father does. What did Jesus say here? Ask, seek, knock. ask it, but then go further than asking. There's just look for it, and go further than looking, knock for it. And your father will give you the good, but it might not be in your time. Anyway, so Jesus taught us to pray. This is the kind of prayer that you see him perhaps praying. Now, Jesus had some major decisions to make, didn't he? Now, did he know that he was going to die as early as he did? Did he know he wasn't going to even reach age 34 before he left this earth? You suppose he knew that? Yeah, he knew. I mean, we're told that he knew. So what did he do once he started his public ministry? He started training men to follow him. He started training men to take up the mantle that he would lay down. He started training men. Now, have you thought of this? That Jesus took his message all the way to the cross, and he died there, having only evangelized the nation, the tiny little nation of Israel. Who's going to go to the rest of the world? So he was preparing men to take this message to the masses. Who would you choose if you were going to, if you had a message as important as Jesus's message was, and you knew you weren't going to be able to be the one to take it into Europe or into Africa or into Asia, you weren't going to be able to take it across the ocean into America, where we are. Who would you choose to be the next wave? Who would you choose to entrust the message and the duplication and replication and the promulgation of this message? Who would you choose? Well, I'll go down the phone book. Here's 12 interesting names. I'll just pick them. Did Jesus have a cadre of a multitude of disciples that were following him? Remember the reading that we had in Luke 6? We had at the bottom of the reading, we started verse 12 down about verse 17 and 18. Jesus came down from the mountain, and there was multitudes of his disciples and additional on people who had come weren't necessarily his disciples, but they came from the coastal regions of Tyre and Sidon, and they came from Jerusalem, Judea, to be where he was. They weren't his disciples, they came for this event. Multitudes. Who would you pick to take your message to the world? Let's look now in more detail at Luke 6, where Jesus is on the verge of making some major decisions about who would he entrust with this message. Who shall I give this message to? Who can be, who is trustworthy? Who has the, do you remember one time when mother of James and John came up and said, "Can my two sons sit one side or the other of you when you come in your glory?" And Jesus said, "Can you drink the cup I'm about to drink?" And they said, "We can drink it." He says, "You will drink it." What cup was Jesus about to drink? The cross, the rejection of society, the humiliation and rebuke and rebuff of society. He is about to face that. Can you face that? He's got to pick 12 guys to go into that. He has to know their character, their mental, their makeup, their heart for God, their heart for people. He's got to know all that. He's got this band of disciples out of which he's got to pick 12 to represent him for the rest of eternity. And so it says here in Luke 6, beginning of verse 12, and at it was at this time that he went off to the mountain to pray, and he spent the whole night in prayer to God. Now, I think what I tried to do with that buildup is give some context to why it took him so long. He's got to pick men that would make sure that I heard the gospel. Jesus prayed in John 17. So I don't pray on behalf of my guys, these 12 alone, but on behalf of everybody who believes in me through their word. I ask you, how is it that you came to believe in Jesus Christ? Was it not through the word of these 12 men? They're the ones that wrote the book. They're the ones that made sure that you had it. They're the ones that paid the blood price to get the book into the world, into the hearts and minds of man. They're the ones that were tortured for Jesus, that were not crucified, but martyred. They're the ones. Jesus has got to pick the guys that can endure that and not flake out and bail out and give up so that Mark could hear the gospel. He's got to pick those guys. Don't you agree with me? That's a pretty important decision. Not one to be made flippantly, not one to be made just casually. Oh, I really like that guy. You know, he and I are good buds. John, the apostle whom Jesus loved, there's a great deal of affinity between Jesus and John. They had a character personality match. But others that weren't quite as close. Did he just go out and pick the guys he liked? Or did he pick the guys that were suited for the job? And how do you know who's suited for the job? So I can see Jesus praying about more than 12 guys here, can't you? He's got a multitude. In fact, there was one fella, what was his name, that replaced Judas when Judas fell away?
Matthias.
Matthias. But there were two of them, Matthias and Joseph. Barsabbas? Barabbas? I get those two mixed up. Barsabbas. So there's two of them that met the qualifications of having been with Jesus from his baptism all the way up to his resurrection. There were two of them. And how did Jesus pick? I mean, so what I'm saying is there, in addition to the 12 that he did choose, there were more that were able to be chosen. I wonder if sometimes I have decisions that could go different ways. I could do it this way, I could do it this way, I could do it this way. And you say, well, how important is that decision? How much is resting on that decision? And Chris, you may not know how much is resting on that decision. You only have the little bit that you can see. But there's a God in heaven who can see the whole thing. And Jesus, on the verge of making this very important decision, spent all night praying about it. And then, what did he do? Then it says, and when the day came, he called his disciples and chose 12 of them. Who did he call? He called his disciples. How many of them were there? It says down here in verse 18, 17, and he descended and stood at a level place, and a great multitude of his disciples and a great throng of people from all, there's a lot of them. And out of the lot of them, he chose 12, and then, of course, he named the 12. So that's what we have next from verse 13 down to verse 16. He named the disciples. And then in verse 16, he presented them to his Father. Here are my disciples. He came down from the mountain with the 12 to the level place where the multitudes were gathered. And here are my guys. These are the ones I have chosen. But it says in verse 18, 19, and all the multitudes were trying to touch him, for power was coming from him and healing all. The only thing I want to say about that is how Jesus spent all night praying. What would it be for you? I know what it was for me when I tried to spend all night praying for my friend Steve. I fell asleep. I was bogged down with weariness. I was bogged down with sorrow when he was dying of cancer. And I had no energy left. Jesus had energy flowing from him, from his session with God. So I know how Jesus approached his major decisions. And to my shame, I can tell you there have been times when I've made some decisions that I didn't consult anybody but myself. You been there? I just didn't talk to anybody but me, not even my wife, about decisions that impacted us financially. And I regret that. But here, how do you approach your major decisions? I'm asking you to see in Jesus the value of talking to your Father about the choices that you're making. Sometimes the choices you're making are challenging. That's what I want to talk to you about next in Luke 22. Here in Luke 22, Jesus is in the Garden of Gethsemane with Peter, Andrew, James. And I think just those three had come with him. At that far. In verse 31, Jesus said, "Simon, Simon, Satan has demanded permission to sift you guys." That's plural. The you in verse 31 is plural. You all, they'd say down south, he's demanded permission to sift y'all like sheep, like wheat. Satan wants to sift through all of you guys and find your weaknesses. But I prayed for you. I prayed for you that your faith may not, I prayed for you, Peter, that your faith may not fail. And when you return, strengthen your brothers. Okay. I want to get further down. Jesus knew bad things were coming. So he said in verse 39, and he came out from his prayer and looked at the guys, his disciples who had fallen asleep praying with him, waiting for him. And he came out, and when he arrived at the place, he said to them, "Pray that you may not enter into temptation." So they haven't fallen asleep yet. I got ahead of myself. So Jesus and these three guys went out to the place, and he left them to watch for him. He knew that Judas was leading an angry mob to arrest him. "Watch for me. I'm going to go over here and pray." And they fell asleep. But what did he say to them? He said, "I want you to pray that you don't fall into temptation." You're going to be making choices in your life. Some of them are going to be presented to you by the dark side of life. You're going to be making choices. And Jesus counseled because he knew what was about to happen. He knew the pressures that would come upon Peter. He knew the challenges that the peer pressure and the challenges to say something that wasn't quite true to keep him, Peter, from being hurt. So he said, "Peter, pray that you don't enter into temptation." Michael, you notice that Jesus didn't say, "Pray that you don't face temptation." He didn't ask that temptation be removed. He said, "Pray that you don't enter it." There's a door. It might even be flung open. You might be seeing things that you don't need to see, you shouldn't see. You might be allured by things, and the door is open. Jesus said, "Pray that you don't enter it." You don't have to go through an open door, but you want to. You don't have to make that choice, but you want to. Jesus said, pray that you don't enter that. And so then in what verse do we want next? In verse 41 and 42. And he withdrew from them about a stone's throw and knelt down and began to pray. Now he just said, "You guys pray that you don't enter into temptation." And he got down on his knees and he began to pray. "Father, if you are willing, remove this cup from," what cup? Wasn't Jesus thirsty on the cross? The next day he was like, "So take this cup. I don't need a drink right now." Is that what he's talking about? This cup? The cup of God's fierce wrath against sinful people, Jesus was about to drink. I don't want to drink that. I don't want to drink that. I don't want to go through that yet. Not what I want, but what you want. So he said, not what I want, but what you want. I tell you, I believe that Jesus was able to face the cross because he first of all got down on his knees and submitted his will to God. He was able to face a temptation that is stronger than one you will ever face. That is a willingly dying for somebody else, letting them drive nails through your hands. That's a big temptation to resist that, right? He was able to face that because he prayed to his Father, I want your will to be done, not mine. Total surrender came through prayer. And then we read here in verse 43. Now an angel came from heaven and appeared to him, strengthening him. It's interesting to me, Mark, that the angel didn't say, oh, you don't have to go through this. The angel didn't take away the temptation. The angel gave him the strength to face it. Do you believe that by taking your very challenging decisions to God, that he will give you the strength to go through it and not bail out? In Matthew 24, verse 13, just a reference, Jesus said regarding the tearing down of the temple and the onslaught of the Roman army that would be destroying lives and properties and livelihoods and family connections and everything that they knew that life consisted. He says, the one who endures to the end will be saved. And so the angel strengthened him, not taking the difficulty away, but giving him the ability to endure it. Do you believe God can do that for the challenges that you face? That's the real question. And when he rose from prayer, verse 45, well, 44, and being in agony, he was praying fervently. Fervently means what? Johnny, fervently. Yeah, on fire. On fire. Passionately. Good. Passionately, fervently, on fire. This was an urgent prayer. Jesus wasn't just, well, and thinking about the Seahawks playing the Rams today, and I'm thinking about that and other things. And so I really distract. Fervently would be passionately focused, passionately, urgently, to the point where there's perspiration as it was. I mean, you ever got sweaty praying outside? I mean, think about that. It's outside, it's not only outside, it's night. And perspiration is falling like great drops. Passionately praying, help me through this. And an angel came and strengthened him. And then Jesus got up and strengthened the others. Let's read that a little bit. 45. And when he rose from prayer, he came to his disciples and found them sleeping from sorrow and said to them, why are you sleeping? Rise, pray that you may not enter into temptation. I guess what I'm trying to say is that as Jesus found the strength to face this very challenging decision, I will let them nail me to a cross tomorrow. I mean, I have difficulty when I'm getting myself ready to go for surgery on my finger. Or they're gonna cut my knee open and take the broken stuff out and put a fake knee in there. And it's just a challenge to go through that kind of, and Jesus is prepping his heart to let them kill him without resistance tomorrow. Gave himself up in the garden. Wouldn't defend himself at his trial. I'm saying he found the strength to do that through prayer, talking to his God, who sent an angel. So to the point where he could come to the aid of those who are supposed to be watching with him and strengthen them. How do you approach your struggles? Just kind of, it's what's going to happen. So I just stiff upper lip. I'm English all the way. Stiff upper lip. How do you face your challenges? I don't want to do it, and so I don't. How do you face your challenges? Let me recommend, heartily recommend, that you follow the pattern of Jesus. You got something really challenging that you have to do and you don't want to do. Follow the pattern of Jesus. He found strength from an angel to get it done. God sent him to rescue me because he loved me enough to sacrifice his son. I suspect that if he would give his only son to rescue me, if I'm going through something difficult, he would send an angel to help me. Don't you think that would makes a lot of sense? And that's what God did for Jesus. So in Luke 18, back up just a couple chapters, Luke 18 told a parable. Now, the parable's set in the how should we say? Jesus said, I have a fire to pour out upon the earth, and how I wish it were already kindled. He's talking about the tearing down of the Jewish society to bring that old covenant to an end, and all the turmoil, the great tribulation that it would bring upon his people. So he's talking about here in Luke 18, verse 1. He was telling them a parable to show that at all times they ought to pray and not lose heart. So, have you ever found a situation so discouraging you just felt like, I want to give up? I can't face this anymore. That's what Jesus is talking about here. Their society is going to go through the great tribulation. They're going to go through the losing of friends and family and houses and property and livelihood and freedom. You're going to go through all of that because of the hatred of the Jews toward Christians. You're going to go through all of that. And he says, I don't want you to give up. I want you to face it with prayer. Now, I know this. You and I will not go through. Well, I don't know that, do I? The way our society is going, we may go through some really harsh times. We may go through some really harsh times. Jesus said, pray and never give up. In verse saying, there was in a certain city a judge that didn't fear God. Now, what kind of people bring heartache and trouble and tribulation and pressure and abuse to their society? God-fearing people? There's a judge that doesn't fear God, okay? And did not respect man. And there was a widow. Now, you talk about two opposites. Talk about two opposites. A widow, a woman living without a husband to protect and defend her. Whether she's a widow or like some of our, like Susan or some of our other women, divorcees, divorced, no husband to protect them. Can you imagine a David and Goliath situation like that? This godless man who doesn't respect man as the judge and this widow woman, okay, defenseless, what kind of power can she bring against him? None. And sometimes don't we feel like that in our society? There's nothing we can do. The godless people are running rampant and there's nothing we can do. Well, that's situation here. There was this guy, this judge that didn't fear God, and this widow who had no power. And for a while, she was saying, give me my legal protection, verse 3. And for a while, he was unwilling. But afterward, he said to himself, even though I don't fear God or respect man, yet because this widow bothers, how was she bothering him? Input, how was she bothering him?
Followed him and yeah.
Knock, knock, knock. Yeah, you heard persistence. Remember the story about persist that we talked about a little while ago? Friend come at night and don't have bread and I go knock on my neighbor's door and finally he gives it to me. That's what she's doing to him, wearing him out. He says, verse 6:5, yet because this widow bothers me, I will give her legal protection, lest by continually coming she wear me out. So the widow and the judge. Now, is God like this unjust judge that you just have to pound on his door until he's tired of hearing from you? And so he says, go away, I'll give you what you want. Is that what Jesus is presenting here? Quite the opposite. If even an ungodly man will yield to the pressure of persistence, he says that always pray, never give up. Even an ungodly man will yield under the barrage of your persistence. How much more will your heavenly Father? See, hear what the unrighteous judge said. And now, shall not God bring about justice for his elect who cry to him day and night? And will he delay long over them? Now, again, this specific situation is that they were going to be going through the great tribulation, the great grinder of the pressure. Is God going to let his people just languish under that pressure? If they're calling to him, he's going to respond. He's going to respond. I tell you, he will bring about justice speedily. Great. I mean, that's who God is. But look at the last question. However, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth? Now, the coming of the Son of Man in this context was when he sent the Roman army to destroy Jerusalem. That's when the Son of Man came. He said, will my people have enough faith to keep calling out to me when that happens? Or will they let the pressure of the situation shut them up? So I'm asking us, see, we know that God is faithful, but will he find us faithful? What about it? Will we keep calling out to him even though it looks hopeless, even though there's nothing we can do about it, even though he hasn't responded yet? Will we keep calling out to him? Jesus taught a parable. I want you to keep calling out to him, even if it doesn't look like it's happening. You keep calling out. I mean, here's a question for you, please. Does God, are his actions determined by my timetable? And if you say no, you're right. But you all also drawn a picture around why we tend to give up on God, because he hasn't responded to our timetable. And so, will he find faith? Will he find people who, in spite of the difficulties, in spite of the challenges, being in prison or being made a public ridicule, Hebrews 10, being made a spectacle publicly, losing everything, will they keep calling out to him? How long did Jesus anticipate that his people would call out to him? See? When do you give up? When do you give up? And the word starts with an N. Never. You never give up. You keep calling out. So here's Jesus, our perfect example. Now, all I want to say here in closing, pray like he did. Pray more like he did. You find yourself having a 2-minute prayer before you go to bed, make it 4. If you find yourself having a 10-minute prayer, can you make it 15? Can you be more communicative with your Father? If you find yourself giving up after 3 or 4 times asking him, can you make it 6? Be more like Jesus in your prayer life, more focused on getting the answers that a loving Father wants to give. Do that, please, while we stand and sing.